The nuclear arms race can be almost as deadly as the bombs themselves. Bullets, bombs, a string of assassinations. Bizarre deaths strike Star Wars, America's nuclear strategic defense program.
I think something sinister, something secret, something very toxic went on.
The body count rises. Could it be state-sponsored sabotage?
They believed they had to kill in order to ensure the continuity of their regime.
And in Iran, when a secret nuclear program is exposed,
so much satellite attention was zooming in on Iran.
A spree of bloody assassinations follows.
They don't have a clue who did it.
From nuclear secrets to space-based weaponry, were they killed because they knew too much?
The killed person was dead. Let everybody else guess why.
In the early 1980s, America and the Soviet Union are locked in the 20th century's longest-running conflict, the Cold War. Decades of stockpiling nuclear warheads have created enough firepower to destroy the world 100 times over.
Wouldn't it be better to save lives than to avenge them?
In 1983, President Ronald Reagan decides the only way to end the proliferation of nuclear weapons is to take the battlefield into a new frontier, space.
I call upon the scientific community to give us the means of rendering these nuclear weapons impotent and obsolete.
Reagan's ambitious plan is the Strategic Defense Initiative, popularly known as Star Wars.
He wanted to find a way to defend instead of just attack back. And that would require stopping all the incoming missiles dead.
The United States poured a ton of money into developing a missile shield around the United States.
By intercepting nuclear missiles in space, the Strategic Defense Initiative is supposed to prevent war and keep America safe.
The centerpiece of SDI, the part that gave it the name Star Wars, was the space-based lasers that sound a lot like science fiction. And a lot of critics thought it would work about as well as the Death Star.
A previously confidential dossier reveals the scientific challenge is estimated to be 8 times more complex than the project which resulted in the atomic bomb. In an attempt to turn this science fiction concept into reality, across the globe, thousands of scientists are mobilized. Physicists, engineers, software developers.
SDI was an extremely sophisticated, extremely complicated system involving multiple layers of sensors and defense systems.
51 separate companies are contracted by the U.S., among them, 8 in Great Britain. But soon, the scientists tasked with executing this top-secret defense project begin dying in mysterious ways. Bristol, England, October 28, 1986. Computer scientist Arshad Sharif is found dead in his car. He's been working on electronic warfare technology for the British engineering company Marconi.
Arshad Sharif was highly regarded by Marconi. He was working on a system that Marconi regarded as the most advanced in the world.
The circumstances of his death are bizarre.
Arshad Sharif had apparently tied 4 lengths of rope together, tied one end around a tree, the other end round his neck, and driven off in his car. The cause of death was asphyxiation.
It's one of the strangest apparent suicides Bristol police have ever seen. Stranger still, Sharif has no history of depression, no connection to the city where he died, and he's about to get married.
There were every signs that he wanted the marriage to go ahead.
Also, evidence at the scene suggests he might not have been alone.
3 cigars were found in his car, partially smoked, And yet he didn't smoke and in fact had a sign up on the dashboard.
On a cassette tape addressed to his father, police find what is assumed to be a suicide message recorded by Sharif.
But actually the father said that it didn't give any explanation for his death at all.
And why is an 18-inch wrench found on the floorboard? Has it been used to hold down the gas pedal?
Arshad Sharif's father and Arshad's brother did not believe for a moment that he'd committed suicide. They felt that he may have been dead before he was put in the car, or perhaps drugged. There were no real tests done to check for drugs or anything untoward.
Shortly after Sharif's death, seasoned journalist Tony Collins begins investigating the apparent suicide. He finds out something that makes the death even stranger. Just 3 months earlier, another young scientist had died in the same city.
Even today, after 35 years, I'm convinced that there's more to Vimal Darjibai's death than meets the eye.
24-year-old computer programmer Vimal Darjibai works in London. Colleagues say he's happy and dedicated to his career. Then on Monday, August 4th, 1986, he's found dead over 100 miles from home, below Bristol's Clifton Suspension Bridge. Like Sharif, Darjibai has no known connection to Bristol and has shown no sign of depression.
He was on top of the world at the time that he was found at the bottom of the Clifton Suspension Bridge.
Wine is found in his car, but Darjibai doesn't drink.
Vimal Darjibai's friends and family were convinced that it wasn't suicide. They wrote long letters to the coroner explaining why they did not believe suicide at all.
No one can think of a single reason why Darjibai would throw himself off a 250-foot bridge. And another detail stands out as strange.
When he landed, his trousers were down, and there was a puncture mark that never was fully explained.
Could Darjibai have been injected with drugs? A toxicology test is negative, but it's not known what drugs they tested for.
Drugs used to incapacitate people often fall into the class of sedative hypnotic drugs such as benzodiazepines, barbiturates, or opiate medications like morphine. And a toxicology lab would really have to know which one to look for in order to detect it accurately.
There are so many unanswered questions, the coroner can't explain Vimal Darjibai's death. Two young scientists are dead. Both drove over 100 miles to Bristol to apparently kill themselves. Both showed no sign of depression. Neither left an explanation for their death. And the similarities don't end there.
Vimal Darjibai and Arshad Sharif both worked for the Marconi Company, both of them in London, and they both chose Bristol to meet their premature ends. And in neither case was the death properly explained.
Could their work somehow be related to their deaths? Collins finds out Sharif had been working on computer simulations called Zeus to test radar on Harrier fighter jets, while Darjibai was creating software to test the sensors of Stingray torpedoes. The software they're developing for jets and torpedoes ultimately can be used for another purpose: intercepting missiles in space as part of Star Wars, the Strategic Defense Initiative. High-tech computer coding is the SDI's secret weapon.
The Strategic Defense Initiative was intended to exploit the much greater level of computer power that American systems had at the time. So it was intended to be an asymmetric response to the Soviet Union. Asymmetric meaning you don't go at them against their strength, you go at them using your own strength.
When it comes to computer science, the Soviets are years behind their Cold War rivals, America and Britain. To even the playing field, could they have resorted to assassinating SDI scientists? then staging them as suicides. Tony Collins goes back through the records, trying to find out if the deaths of Sharif and Dajabai are isolated cases. What he finds is shocking.
What we have is a series of unexplained deaths of people working on highly sensitive technologies in the defense industry.
The more he digs, the more deaths he discovers. Electrocutions, car wrecks, bizarre suicides. Collins makes a list revealing 16 defense-related deaths between 1982 and 1986. All have links to highly classified defense projects in Britain. Projects with possible ties to the Strategic Defense Initiative. As suspicions rise, so too will the body count.
He was terrified and convinced that there was some foul play involved.
Investigative journalist Tony Collins has discovered a series of strange deaths linked to America's Star Wars defense program. In late 1986, two scientists die within 3 months of each other in the same city. And the list of possible victims is about to get even longer.
My father was fun. He was a man who held strong opinions. He was clever, forthright, quite joyful. He could find joy in things.
52-year-old John Britton is a high-level computer scientist working for the British Ministry of Defense. Successful, happy, until the summer of 1986, when he returns from a business trip to the United States.
When my father came back from America, he was profoundly changed, and he was vacant, distracted, withdrawn. My father sat me down on the stairs in our house. He said, "Jane, if anything happens to me, I want you to make sure the family's okay." I don't think I took as seriously as perhaps I should have done at the time.
Around Christmas time, her father has a suspicious car accident, but survives.
His brakes failed very suddenly, so he was driving at speed, and he managed to maneuver the car into a ditch. My father thought that something had been deliberately done, that his brakes had been tampered with. He was terrified and convinced that something had happened, that there was some foul play involved.
Then, on January 12th, 1987, death stalks Britton again.
He started the car, left it running with the garage door closed, and he was found slumped over the wheel, carbon monoxide poisoning.
My father was dead. They couldn't rouse him.
And the coroner ruled it was a straightforward case of an accidental death.
Britton's daughter doesn't believe it's an accident, and she doesn't buy suicide either.
If you're asking me if I think he killed himself, I would come down on the side of no. I think that something sinister, something secret, something very toxic went on.
Britton specialized in testing future weapons systems and analyzing enemy forces' capabilities using computer simulations. Such simulations were crucial to the SDI program because real-world testing in space wasn't affordable or practical.
Star Wars could never be tested in practice. It had to be through simulation. The information he had would certainly have been perceived by some as working on a technology at the heart of Star Wars.
Barely a month passes before another military scientist dies. Peter Peeble, 46, is found wedged under his car in the garage. Like Britton, he's a victim of carbon monoxide poisoning. Peter Peeble was a world authority on electronic surveillance and target detection. Technologies that would also be key to the Star Wars program. two top scientists dead within weeks of each other, both by carbon monoxide, both keepers of military tech secrets.
They both worked for government establishments. They were both very au fait with technologies that were very sensitive. That raises questions as to whether there was more to their deaths than meets the eye.
Collins' tally of unusual deaths rises from 16 to 18. And digging back into the 1970s archives, he finds even more. In all, he uncovers 25 mysterious deaths in the defense industry. Authorities dismiss any links between them as pure coincidence. But to former CIA intelligence analyst Dr. Marion Layton, that doesn't add up.
It could not have been a coincidence that all of these deaths occurred within a short period of time and among a very tight-knit scientific and technical community in Britain. You have to suspect that there was some kind of a conspiracy, some kind of an organized program to get rid of these people, and also, by doing this, to warn other people who might want to become involved in this program to stay away.
The obvious suspect is the Soviet Union's KGB. But Dr. Layton believes the assassinations could be the work of another secret agency, equally feared, but more experienced in covert assassination.
They had a particular expertise in killing people, but making it look like suicide or an accident.
In the 1980s, a string of suspicious deaths in Britain appear connected to America's Star Wars program. And in August 1988, the name of Peter Ferry, a senior Marconi defense scientist, is added to the list. Ferry has been electrocuted. It appears he has attached stripped wires of an electrical cord to the metal fillings in his teeth.
It's an extraordinary way to commit suicide.
In an eerie similarity to other cases, Ferry's family reported he had experienced a strange car accident not long before he died.
He'd been driving down a narrow road when a 10-ton lorry drove over his car. He'd just managed to get out before it exploded. It does seem as if it could have been deliberate. Who knows?
Ferry possessed extensive knowledge of NATO military strengths and weaknesses. In the same month, there's another similar death. 50-year-old Alistair Beckham appears to have wired himself to the mains power supply. There's no suicide note. His cause of death is electrocution. Beckham works for one of the companies contracted to America's SDI program. Documents found at his home indicate he had knowledge of a wide variety of military technologies. Have Beckham and Ferry really committed suicide? Or have they been killed because of their knowledge of secret military tech?
Possibly because of their knowledge, they had been asked to divulge that information and had been unwilling to do so.
If the deaths are assassinations, the most obvious suspect is the Soviet Union. For them, the Star Wars program could mean the end of superpower status.
If Star Wars worked, it would have been a tremendous threat to the Soviet Union. It would have neutralized their nuclear weapons.
The KGB, the USSR's state security service, was known for using poisons to assassinate. In 1978, they were suspected of supplying the poison that killed Bulgarian dissident Georgi Markov in London. While walking past a bus stop, Markov was jabbed by an unknown assassin with an umbrella. After his death, a pellet laced with the deadly toxin ricin was found embedded in his skin. Could the Star Wars cases and Vimal Dajabai's strange puncture mark be further examples of covert Soviet assassination?
The Soviet Union wanted to do whatever it could to derail the program. It's not out of the question that the Soviet Union would have resorted to this kind of a thing.
But in the 1970s, Britain had expelled nearly 100 suspected Soviet spies. Since then, the Soviets had found penetrating British society difficult. Instead, relying on one particular sister agency to do their intelligence gathering for them. The notorious East German spy agency, the Stasi.
I believe the Stasi was extremely successful in infiltrating the United Kingdom and far more successful than the Soviet Union.
The East German Ministry of State Security, or Stasi, was the most comprehensive intelligence gathering agency in the world. Masters of covert surveillance, with their skills honed for years on the streets of East Berlin. The Stasi was a communist paramilitary organization with 100,000 personnel and tentacles far beyond its own borders.
The Stasi's job was to protect communism in East Germany, but to protect communism more generally where the KGB and the Soviet Union could not themselves do it.
A document recently unearthed from top-secret Stasi files details a 1973 deal signed by the heads of the Stasi and of the KGB. It reveals an agreement for the Stasi to unofficially penetrate America and NATO countries to gather intelligence on technology. Training for espionage operations included hand-to-hand combat and, for some, assassination techniques.
They also undertook what Marcus Wolf, until 1986, the head of the East German intelligence service, called wet jobs. That is to say, the physical elimination of individuals who were seen as a direct threat to the future of communism in East Germany and the Soviet Union.
At the time, one of the most direct threats to communism was America's Star Wars program. In 1985, the Stasi chief issues an order to use all options to gather military-related information from the enemy. The Stasi are suspected of deploying up to 100 secret agents in Britain, specifically to target defense programs.
And the Stasi had a particular expertise in killing people but making it look like suicide or an accident.
The Stasi were rumored to use undetectable poisons developed in a secret KGB lab.
The poisons caused, in some cases, caused people to behave irrationally. In some cases, it simply killed them outright. But nobody would be able to trace it later to a poison.
Use of toxins, combined with psychological intimidation, could explain some of the victims' bizarre behavior.
Is it plausible that the Stasi was in some way involved in these mysterious deaths? Yes, it is plausible. The Stasi were killers. They believed they had to kill in order to ensure the continuity of their regime. Were they interested in defense intelligence? Absolutely. Were they interested in electronic defense intelligence? Absolutely.
Although suspicion about the Stasi's involvement is strong, the one thing that's always been missing is cold, hard proof. But could evidence have been buried deep in East Germany's archives? The Mystery. A series of strange deaths linked to America's Star Wars program in the 1980s. The Theory. An assassination campaign carried out by East German spy network, the Stasi. But there's no proof. And according to intelligence experts, it's possible there never will be.
I would say if such evidence did exist, it would have been destroyed within the first few hours of the collapse of the East German regime.
With the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, millions of Stasi files are destroyed. And with them, the smoking gun that might have brought closure to this string of unexplained deaths.
Details of Stasi operations, including wet jobs, killing, assassination. They were the most incriminating. They were the first to go.
When the Cold War ends in 1991, tellingly, the deaths of defense scientists in Britain cease too. The Strategic Defense Initiative never succeeds in creating a space-based missile defense shield.
The SDI program never reached the prototype stage because many of the technologies were very, very advanced.
Over three decades since the SDI's inception, missile defense remains one of the military's most difficult challenges. The closest program America has is Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, which has been tested intercepting decoy missiles high over the Pacific Ocean. Just as the challenge of missile defense endures, so too does the mystery of what happened to so many defense scientists. Jane Hankins' father was one of six scientists who died from carbon monoxide poisoning. She hopes one day the truth will be revealed.
The main question about my father's death is, for me, is what happened and how did it happen? The fact that there were six scientists who died, like my father, from carbon monoxide poisoning, all of whom had been involved in the Star Wars defense projects, seems way beyond a coincidence. It seems downright bloody sinister, if you ask me.
Being the keeper of military knowledge can be dangerous. And in the Middle East, 20 years later, another set of scientists are in the crosshairs. January 12th, 2010. Iranian academic Masoud Ali Mohammadi leaves home from his job at the University of Tehran. But he will never arrive.
Al-Mohammadi was killed by a bomb that had been attached to a motorcycle that was parked near his house.
This has all the hallmarks of a professional hit. But Ali Mohammadi seems an unusual target.
Officially, he was just teaching what's called particle physics.
He's a distinguished, well-published lecturer at Iran's most prestigious university. But who would want this dedicated academic dead? The death of Ali Mohammadi comes at a time when the eyes of America and the world are on Iran.
So much satellite attention was zooming in on Iran. No country in the world has more satellites looking into what's happening than Iran did.
At various remote sites, American intelligence observes suspicious activity. Analysts suspect Iran is trying to conceal a huge secret. A clandestine program to develop nuclear weapons.
Building a nuclear facility is not an easy operation. It leaves a tremendous amount of traces and imagery that you can see from space.
Near the remote village of Fordo, satellites spy a hidden structure. Not one, but multiple entrances. One tunnel, two, an interconnected network. Iran's building something underground they don't want the world to know about.
They could see, for instance, that pathways are being built. They could see that there's a tunnel being built in the mountain. And as a result, they had good reason to believe that this was a nuclear facility.
Surprisingly, Iran's nuclear program was kickstarted in the late 1950s by America. President Eisenhower actually provided the Shah of Iran with the country's first reactor in a program known as Atoms for Peace. For decades, Iran uses nuclear power only for peaceful purposes. But in the 2000s, their nuclear activities become more secretive.
A few years earlier, the Iranians had effectively been outed in having nuclear facilities in a place called Natanz that had not been previously declared to the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Iran claims Natanz and the undisclosed site at Fordo are for energy production, not nuclear weapons.
From the American side, They don't buy that. They believe that the only reason you would build a small facility in the mountain is for weapons purposes.
While the mystery of the nuclear program is unraveling, another mystery is unfolding on Iranian streets.
In 2007, a number of scientists in Iran started to die various ways.
In January 2007, Ardashir Husseinpour is poisoned by gas. Masood Ali Mohammadi is killed by a bomb attached to a parked motorcycle in January 2010. In November 2010, Majid Shahiri is killed by a car bomb. Feriadun Abbasi Davoni survives an identical attack on the same day. In 2011, Dariush Razian Azad is shot dead by a gunman on a motorcycle. And in 2012, Mustafa Ahmadi Roshan is killed when motorcyclists attach a magnetic bomb to his car. As word of the deaths filter out of Iran, international intelligence agencies try to uncover a connection between the scientists. Something that could explain why they were killed. In the case of Ali Mohammadi, hacked emails from U.S. private intelligence agency Stratfor reveal analysts trying to discover if his work as a university professor might be a cover for something more sinister. Finally, Ali Mohammadi's widow reveals what none of his students or colleagues knew. He was involved in secret work on Iran's nuclear program.
It seems that he was working for the nuclear program of his country, but he had kept that a secret.
Iranian President Ahmadinejad later confirms all the dead scientists are nuclear martyrs. Iran's nuclear program is being ruthlessly targeted.
For many of us who were observing and studying Iran, it was quite clear very early on that there is a very intense, dirty war taking place behind the scenes.
But who exactly is killing scientists in this secret dirty war? There's no shortage of suspects.
Most of the Western world, the EU, the UK, Israel, almost all these nations didn't want to see Iran having nuclear weapons.
In the late 2000s, it's suspected that Iran is on a path to producing weapons-grade uranium. While the world debates how to respond, it seems someone is already taking action. Five Iranian nuclear scientists are assassinated in targeted attacks.
It seemed that someone wanted to intimidate scientists from working for Iran's nuclear program.
Meanwhile, Iran's nuclear plans have hit another hurdle. A mysterious malfunction is affecting a crucial piece of their enrichment equipment, the centrifuges at their Natanz plant.
The centrifuge works pretty much like a Sabbath spinner. So we spin the gas around with a lot of energy and for a lot of time in order to achieve these high enrichments.
The centrifuges are designed to separate weapons-grade uranium-235 from another isotope, uranium-238. But a strange glitch is making that process impossible.
It deliberately would either speed up the machines, throw off the bearings, and destroy the machines, or make them go too slowly.
The Iranians were totally puzzled as to what's the problem with our centrifuges.
The problem is revealed to be a sophisticated cyber war dubbed Stuxnet. A virus with 20 times more code than any other previously created. Although Iran's nuclear plants are not connected to the internet, somehow this worm has jumped the cyber moat.
We believe that Stuxnet got across the moat, as it were. It got across from the internet to the Iranian isolated network. in a thumb drive, a very ordinary thumb drive.
Once in the system, the worm targets the logic controller that governs Natanz's centrifuges, making them spin out of control.
Stuxnet would, with great specificity, sabotage the particular industrial controls that the Iranian nuclear weapons program's centrifuges used.
It's clearly a targeted attack. Although present worldwide, Stuxnet is designed to cause damage only at Iran's nuclear plants. Sabotage by software. But who's behind it? Rumors confirmed by anonymous sources in the U.S. government lead in just two directions.
There is a lot of reporting by many sources that Stuxnet was a joint U.S. and Israeli product. Neither country has admitted it, but there are plenty of clues.
One clue is this secret NSA document, declassified in 2013. It reveals the NSA has been authorized to undertake so-called computer network attacks since 1997.
I think we can say now with 90% certainty, developed by the United States and the Israeli Mossad jointly.
Could there be a link between Stuxnet and the scientists' assassinations? Both disrupt Iran's nuclear ambitions. Both are precisely targeted hits. Could the same culprits be responsible? In the wake of the killings, pressure mounts on America to answer the allegations they've been involved in assassinating Iran's scientists. The Secretary of State makes an emphatic statement.
I want to categorically deny any United States involvement in any kind of act of violence inside Iran.
To actually send the Secretary of State herself to the podium in front of the cameras to say so was a very strong signal that the U.S. is really opposed to this.
What about Iran's long-term rival, Israel? Their secret service, the Mossad, is known to undertake well-orchestrated targeted hits.
Israel considers Iran's acquisition of a nuclear weapon to be an existential threat. So it's not implausible that the Israeli intelligence services would kill scientists involved in the program to stave off that potential outcome.
But Viktor Ostrovsky, a former Mossad officer, says they are trained to leave no trace.
The hallmark of a Mossad hit is there is no sign behind that can track back to the person who did it. The killed person is dead. Let everybody else guess why.
With Israel the prime suspect, there's a twist in the case. An arrest is made in the murder of Massoud Ali Mohammadi.
Seen here during his trial, an Iranian man convicted of killing a scientist.
But he's not an Israeli. He's a homegrown killer with a shocking story. In January 2010, one of Iran's leading nuclear scientists, Massoud Ali Mohammadi, is assassinated by a remote-controlled bomb planted on a motorcycle. The prime suspect is Israel. But in 2011, an Iranian, Majid Jamali Fashi, is arrested for the crime. He claims he was hired by Israel.
In our first meeting, the person who is in charge of recruiting agents from Mossad took me to the Israeli consulate in Istanbul.
In his confession, he said that the Mossad had brought him to Israel in secret and had trained him in assassination techniques, including the use of magnetic bombs.
But former Mossad officer Viktor Ostrovsky doesn't believe Fashi's story.
Based on what he admitted, doesn't sound like an Israeli Mossad operation. You don't hire somebody else to do the job for you. You don't hand those kind of operations to somebody else.
There's a strong suspicion Fashi's confession might not be genuine.
The authorities probably made some promise to him, like his family would be well taken care of if he would publicly confess. And so the confession of Fashi may have been totally made up by the Iranian authorities.
People will admit anything under the hand of the Iranian Secret Service. It doesn't take much to do that.
In May 2012, Fashi is executed by the regime for being a murderer and Israeli spy.
And why? Because they needed a scapegoat. They needed for domestic consumption to tell the public, we found the murderer.
According to some intelligence analysts, the real culprits were never caught.
The Iranians did not catch those who were involved in the assassinations. Those who executed the operation managed to leave the country. They don't have a clue who did it.
Most international intelligence experts agree the deaths are likely the work of the Mossad.
Mossad is not in the business of admitting what it is doing, but its rather dispassionate denials have in them themselves sent a signal that they're not distancing themselves tremendously from this.
Both Stuxnet and the assassinations had a significant impact. Iran's nuclear program was slowed, but not stopped.
It set them back. It did not stop them. I would suspect they lost months, but not years.
Ultimately, it wasn't murder or cyber warfare that halted Iran's nuclear ambition. It was the efforts of dealmakers like Trita Parsi.
The nuclear crisis was resolved in a way that few people, at least in Washington, believed possible. Negotiations took place in Iran starting in July 2012.
After 22 months of talks, a nuclear deal is struck.
Because of this deal, the international community will be able to verify that the Islamic Republic of Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon.
Iran is subjected to stricter nuclear inspections than any other country in the world in return for the lifting of nuclear-related sanctions.
At no point will they have more than roughly 400 kilos of low-enriched uranium, which is only one-third of what you need to build a nuclear bomb.
The tight restrictions mean Iran's nuclear capability is minimized. And on the streets of Tehran, the car bombs and shootings of scientists cease.